Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, April 7th. I'm Ray Graff. Happens every year about this time. The weather starts getting nicer. We get outside, try to get more active, and then the aches and the pains begin. And here today to try to help you avoid those things and maybe improve them if you already have the aches and pains, and I do. Give us a call and you can talk to Matthew Goodemote, physical therapist. If you have an injured or aching knee, shoulder, elbow, whatever, 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or email voxpop@wamc.org if you wish, but the number is 800-348-2551. Physical therapy, Matthew Goodemote, and your calls coming up after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us again today is physical therapist Matthew Goodemote. Matthew is one of just 350 spine specialists holding a diploma from the McKenzie Spine Institute International. He and his staff at Goodemote Physical Therapy provide a whole body approach to therapy by offering a blend of exercise-based and manual therapy. Goodemote Physical Therapy offers small group strength training classes for osteoporosis, fall prevention, and athletic performance, and their programs are designed to prevent injury and to improve your performance in sports and recreation. So if you have a question about physical therapy, well, you've come to the right place. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Matthew Goodemote, welcome back, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Ray. How are you?
I'm pretty well. It's, that time of year, you get outside, you do a little digging, and then, the back starts barking at you. So I think it'll be a busy show today. Anything you want to touch on before we hit the email bag?
No, I'm ready to roll.
Okie doke. This one came in quite a while back from Mike in Highland. Mike says, simple question, golf elbow. When the heck will it heal?
Great. Golfer elbow. So yeah. Golfer's elbow is on the inner part of the elbow. So people have heard of tennis elbow. That's on the outer part of the elbow. And basically what's happened is the tendons that attach to the bone have become irritated. And depending on how long it's been going on, there can actually be some degeneration of the tissue, and that requires exercise to improve it. And specifically when it comes to tendons, they love to get stronger. So you want to do exercises to improve the strength. And then it's a whole sequence of things like isometrics, which is when you contract the muscle without moving. And then you go to eccentrics, which bodybuilders know is negatives. That's when you lengthen the muscle while it's under load. And then eventually get backing into concentric, which is just a normal kind of movement that we would do every day. And it's important to kind of go in that sequence so you're trying to build the tolerance of the tendon. One of the things that people do with tendons is they rest, and unfortunately rest only makes the tendon weaker and makes it harder to recover. So resting for a day or so is fine, of course, but resting for days or weeks is not recommended when it comes to tendons. And then in my clinic, we do quite a bit of manual therapy, so we would work on the tissue around the tendon. That's primarily for blood flow and to create the right environment for healing. And you can do the same type of thing with a lacrosse ball or tennis ball at home. And that's what I would do. And this is definitely something that can improve. It's very rare that you can't get improvement with tennis elbow or golfer's elbow with the right approach.
Yeah, but how long? Mike says, when will it heal?
Great question. Depends on how long it's been going on, though. So if it's an acute injury started a week ago, it should be in the 4 to 6 weeks or 6 to 8 week time frame.
Wow.
But if it's been going on for months, then it's the kind of thing that will also take months to get better. So that's where people, again, they've rested, and what's happened is the tolerance to activity reduces. And so then when they start something up again, it irritates the tendon. So then they rest some more, and it kind of just gets into this cycle of not being able to go anywhere. With the right approach, though, you can recover pretty quickly. And when I say those time frames, I mean recover to the point where you're doing things again and again. So pain is sometimes we can alleviate pain in, a couple visits, but it's not better yet because you have to build up the strength of that tendon and the tolerance to exercise. And that's why it takes long, because muscles and tendons take weeks to truly have improvement to them. You don't get it in a day or two.
So Mike's prognosis for playing golf this summer, it just got shot out the window. If it's 6 to 8 to 12 weeks, that's terrible news.
Well, you can do things. So in that case, it's a trick question for me a little bit, because there's a couple things that tendons don't like, and one of them is speed. So swinging a driver, for example, that could irritate it more. And when it comes to the club heads, there are things like changing the grip and things like that can also make a difference on being able to swing. And in that time frame, again, we're talking about like that full recovery back to normal. In the process of that, we start people with swinging a golf club beforehand. So you wouldn't do rehab and then just go 100% into golf. You would calm it down first, start building it up, get the, you know, pitching wedge out, take a few swings there, and then work your way down the clubs till you get the driver out. So it's all like in a we call it a return to sport. So it's a gradual return so that by the time rehab and everything is done, they can perform and they wouldn't have any limitations at that point. So to be honest with you, that they would be able to likely start swinging the golf club in a few weeks, but not necessarily 18 holes.
All right, so maybe the mini golf course with a little windmill might be. Well, yeah, I apologize, Mike and Highland. That's some terrible news for you there. So, by the way, why do some people, Matthew Goodemote, and we are talking physical therapy with Matt Goodemote today. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551. Why do some people get tennis elbow or golf elbow, and then others play forever and don't get that?
Some of it, again, comes down to the grip. So if the grip is too small, it's going to change how you hold the club. Some of it is other things going on in their life, so people who work on the computers or other activities. So the golfer's elbow is on the flexors, and those are the muscles that make you grip your fingers together into a fist. And a lot of times it's the wrist position in addition. So with a golf club, this is where I'm not a pro. So to give exact advice about hold a club, I'm not the right guy for that.
Okay.
But it does depend on how you hold the club. And some people will flex their wrist too much while they're doing it. And that's what leads to the overuse with the swing specifically. And then the biggest one, Ray, is people do not train going into the season. We assume because we finished the season strong that we're going to be able to just pick the club up and go hit 18.
Yeah.
And definitely as we get older, that becomes less and less likely. And for me as a rehab guy and then trying to help people with performance, I'm a huge advocate of off-season training. So it's just like the professional athletes would do. If you're going to get ready for golf, you should have been starting in January. And certainly if you're going to be starting by May, you need to get swinging right now, just at a driving range for a bucket of balls and then doing mobility drills. But in the wintertime, most people should be strength training to prevent these kind of spring injuries.
You know, you've been a little harsh with Mike and Highland. First of all, his form is terrible, and he hasn't done any sort of conditioning. So let's just move on, shall we? This is from Matthew. It's from Diane in Pittsfield. Diane says, I'm an active 60-year-old woman walking 7 to 10 miles a day. Prior to spraining my ankle 5 weeks ago, x-rays showed no sign of broken bones. I do a variety of ankle stretches and strength training exercises. I'm able to walk about 2 to 3 miles now on flat surfaces, but it's still painful and there's still swelling in my foot. When can I expect to regain strength and be able to handle inclines without pain? What exercises would you recommend? And that's from Diane in Pittsfield.
So one of the most common things after an ankle sprain is not restoring motion fully, and specifically the calcaneus, which is your heel bone, it needs to have a little bit of range of motion in there. So when you sprain an ankle, typically you supinate or invert, and we lose some eversion, and that particular movement can lead to problems as she's describing. The swelling, this is where I'm a huge advocate of compression. So a lot of times people will do the ice immediately after spraining their ankle, but that only is good for the first 12 hours after an injury, up to 24 is a maximum. And then it should be compression and elevation. So the fact that she still has swelling indicates that it's not fully healed, and or she keeps doing things that are provoking it, causing the swelling to persist. You can't get full strength back, in my opinion, if you have swelling. So my number one priority for her would be to get rid of the swelling. You can do that by buying a simple compression ankle sleeve at, you know, a drugstore, supermarket, or whatever, and then elevating. And one of the mistakes people make with elevation is they think that having their feet like in a recliner is elevation. But what I mean by elevation is laying flat on your back with your foot pointing towards the ceiling so that you get gravity to pull the swelling out. So the higher the foot is up in the air, the more gravity will work. And if you combine that with compression, then you get in front of the swelling. Sometimes it's hard to get that ankle range of motion without help. So having a physical therapist evaluate the range of motion. And sometimes we do mobilizations, for example, to help and then teach different movements to restore that specific range of motion. And that will allow things to start to improve. And the other big one is anytime you roll your ankle, you lose a thing called proprioception, which is your body's ability to tell where it is in space. So single leg standing and balancing is very important after an ankle sprain.
Matthew Goodemote is our guest. Matt, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. If you have a physical therapy question, get in line. We'll get to you in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC. Physical therapy today with Matthew Goodemote. Our number is 800-348-2551, and we begin in East Nassau. Lonnie, you're up.
Hi. I really appreciate the show.
Thanks.
So can you hear me okay?
Sure thing. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm a horseback rider. I'm 62 years old, and I have, in addition to osteoporosis in my back, I have both hips are going to need replacement at some point in the future, but I'm still able to ride. My biggest problem as far as pain goes is my lower back right, right on my back. It's this chronic issue that I've had for years, and I periodically go for physical therapy, and it helps a bit. And over the winter when I wasn't riding and probably not doing my exercises as much as I should have, it's really flared up. So I'm doing a lot of exercises now, the stretching and some of the strengthening, and back to riding with some help with some diclofenac periodically. But I want to know what I can do to get beyond this point where I have this chronic pain. Do I just need to do more exercises or what?
So a couple things. Number one, osteoporosis very rarely is the source of pain, specifically the kind of pain you're talking about, unless there's a fracture, in which case it's very painful. So because you mentioned osteoporosis, I would definitely make sure that you don't have a fracture. And one of the issues with horseback riding is that you can flex, so you can bend forward while riding. And I know good riders don't often do that, but I also know it's a horse, so it's possible to do that. And so those kind of positions can provoke something like an osteoporosis. That's just as a me saying something for safety reasons. Number two is because you've had back pain in the past, my guess is that's not what this is, but the solution is to identify the specific movement or position to get into that gives you relief consistently, and then doing that movement or position before, after 10, 15 times a day. So what will happen as you describe, as you do therapy, you start to feel better, and then people will stop doing the very thing that helped them feel better. And the key with the lumbar spine is to maintain your range of motion. And there's four movements in the spine. It's bending forward, bending backwards, and then the hips shift to the right and the hips shift to the left. And you can check those every single day. And if you have a loss of motion, that's the starting point. And if you don't restore the motion fully, then the pain will persist indefinitely. So the number one objective is to restore the motion full and free and maintain that. So once you get over an acute episode, it's not to stop those exercises, but to continue them. That's always the starting point. I call it mobility first, and then stability or strength second. The strengthening stuff is to help prevent in the long term, but it does not resolve it in the short term. And a lot of times people get them mixed up and they start to do all this core stabilization stuff, And meanwhile, their joint's not even moving properly. So the starting point is, again, move full and free, and then from there start working on the strengthening.
Okay, because the pain I have mostly is when I bend forward and I have trouble, you know, even picking things up. And, of course, there's lots of chores that have to be done around the barn here, which exacerbates.
I've had people who've in the barn taken a yoga mat and done a stretch right in the middle of their day once they provoked it to calm it back down. So it can be frustrating in the beginning, but if you do the movements that alleviate the symptoms more frequently, then you'll get longer periods without the symptom. So I would have you start by, before you even go to do the chores, check your motion. And if it's not full and free, start there, get it full and free first. And then while you're doing the chores, if bending forward does provoke it, stop, do the stretch that alleviates it, and then resume it. I'm very, very specific with a stretch. It's usually one or two movements that will give you relief. So I don't do a shotgun approach of trying a whole bunch of different stretches that, you know, are supposed to be good for the back, but I'm trying to identify your specific movement. And then once you identify it, do that one often.
Lonnie, thank you very much for the call. Just one thing, you got to be very careful where you put the yoga mat down in the barn. That's the only thing you really got to watch out. Joel in Blooming Grove. Joel, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon, and thanks for taking my call. This is about osteoarthritis, not osteoporosis. But osteoarthritis, I suffer from that pretty much all over. My main concern is my right wrist, which is the joint that I guess we use more than any others if we are right-handed. And I do have pain in my right wrist most of the time. I am alleviating the pain with Tylenol and bourbon. But are there any exercises?
That's not what the Surgeon General would suggest. Joel, the bourbon and the Tylenol, that doesn't mix. It's not good for your liver, man.
I don't take them at the same time.
Good for you, brother. All right, go ahead.
The Tylenol in the morning, the bourbon in the afternoon. I'm going to hang up and listen on the radio.
Right, thank you, sir. Go ahead, Matt.
Okay, so when it comes to the wrist joint, this is going to be true of any joint that I speak of, and including arthritic joints. So osteoarthritis is just a term for the general wear and tear of the our joints. So with that, it's the same as I just said to the previous caller, which is mobility. So it's starting by getting full range of motion in the joint. And sometimes in the wrist joint, there's eight carpal bones. So there's eight different bones and multiple joints because each of those bones attaches to the one next to it and the one behind it. And so what we'll do in the clinic is we'll do mobilizations and we restore the movement in the wrist as much as we can. And then the individual can maintain it doing things at home, making sure every day they have full range of motion. And then there's soft tissue work, which again, you can use like a lacrosse ball or a tennis ball to rub the muscles of your forearm on to keep the muscles nice and loose and limber. And then strengthening exercises, absolutely. So what I have found for myself, I have an arthritic wrist myself, and I do things like bench press and military press. And those actually help me quite a bit, but there's specific exercises you can do for the forearm, which is just taking a dumbbell and doing little wrist curls. And so you curl the bottom of the palm of your hand up, and then you turn the palm of the hand towards the ground and lift the top of your hand up. And that's a flexion extension type of thing. And then you do pronation and supination, which is like you have a soup in your palm of your hand and then you turn it over and dump it out. That's pronation. And you do that with resistance. So there's quite a bit of exercises that you should do. But it, for me, anytime someone's coming with a joint issue, I start with range of motion there. And when it comes to arthritis also loves heat and compression. So sometimes having a little support, not a wrist support that stops your movement, but having something that goes over top, just a mild compression can be helpful to keep it, keep the blood flow in there and feel good.
Joel, thank you very much for the call. Matthew Goodemot is here today, or at least on the line. He's on the radio, so I say he is here. It's Physical Therapy Today on the program. If you have a question for Matt, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Kathy in Liberty, New York. Kathy, you're up.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been rehearsing this in my mind so that I can make it very concise.
Stay loose.
It's about my back. and I had surgery on my back about a year and a half ago because, well, it's a long story, so I'm not going to go all there. But the thing is, I had lost strength in my left side, my leg, my hip, and so on. And it turned out that it was related to my back, to pressure on my spinal cord and things out of place, and it was a mess.
Yeah.
So I had this pretty extensive surgery, and the neurosurgeon said that it could take up to 2 years to regain the nerve function that was controlling the strength and weakness of my left side. And he just encouraged me to walk. And I did as much physical therapy last year as I was able to. And then this winter has been rough because it's hard to get out and walk in snow and ice. And, you know, but I tried to keep up as much as I could to not lose strength. But I'm wondering, now that it's spring and I'm walking again and I'm in an exercise group, is there anything else that I should be doing? Or should I go back to this neurosurgeon and say, you know, the good thing is I don't have any pain at all in my back, in my hip, anything. But, you know,
So when you have an injury to the nerve, I agree with everything the neurosurgeon has said. It can take typically 18 months up to, I've always heard 3 years, but 2 years is a fine time frame. What you should be seeing, though, in that time frame is a steady improvement. So if you feel like it's plateaued, then that would be something to get it assessed. And it doesn't have to be a neurosurgeon. Again, physical therapists is what we do. So we can check your strength also just by doing manual muscle tests. And then we do functional tests to see how well you're able to withstand resistance. And then you would want to have, so that's if you're plateauing. If you're regressing where you're feeling weaker and you're starting to drag your leg or something like that, that would be something to go back to the surgeon to make sure there's not a new problem. So based on what you've said to me, it doesn't sound like that's the case. It just sounds like wintertime came, and so there might be haven't been as active. But there's definitely things you should be doing, and it's one of those things. The reason why neurosurgeons say that, by the way, is because it's true that there's a lot of people out there where walking is going to be fine, but there's also a percentage of people that actually need intervention where they have specific muscles that are still weak that need to be addressed with something other than walking. And one of my biggest reasons for this is there's a lot of times that we subconsciously start to walk in a way that is not addressing our weakness. So we compensate. For example, we'll turn our toe out. And when we do that, we can still walk, and we can even walk quite a distance, but the muscles that are actually weak, we don't address. We avoid using them, so they never get stronger. So we would start immediately postoperatively wanting to go through individual muscles to make sure you knew what they were meant to do and how to contract, and we call that activation. And then we would progress you through more challenging exercises. But with the leg involved, I would want you to be doing chair squats, which is basically just sitting down in the chair and standing up. I would want you to eventually progress that so you're using more and more of the weak leg, less and less of the good leg, until you can be balanced and you can tell I can use this leg as well on the one side as the other side. So walking is one barometer, but I would want to do it with stairs. I would want to do it with squats. I want to do it with a bunch of things. And so I would advocate for you to have it assessed and see where you're still weak. And there's also one other thing that anytime there's a spine surgery, the core muscles, which are your lower back muscles, they can be affected also. And so doing specific exercises for those would be beneficial. And because I used to work with a spine surgeon and my main forte is the spine, I still check everyone's range of motion because anytime you have a surgery, the joint above it and the joint below it are taking new forces that they're not accustomed to. So I want to give you exercises that keep those joints healthy so they don't become a problem requiring more surgical intervention. So the bottom line is I do think it would be beneficial to have somebody take a look,
check your range of motion, check your strength, and then give you specific exercises for you that are tailored to where you're weak.
Kathy, thanks a lot for the call. And if you rehearsed that, it sounded very natural, so well done. Matthew Goodemote is our guest, physical therapy today on the program. 800-348-2551, the number. Jacob in Cohoes. Hello, Jacob.
Hi there. In 2014, I was diagnosed with tendonitis in my elbow, and it was pretty bad for a while. Got a lot of numbness when I accidentally slept on that side. Started doing strength training. It went away, and then I started doing strength training again recently, and it came back. And I was wondering if there's like a surgery that I need, or should I just continue with the strength training?
Well, the fact you mentioned numbness has me a little bit confused, because a typical tendonitis would not cause numbness. But there is a nerve that runs right near where the tendons are, so you could have some involvement. That doesn't require surgery, but definitely requires intervention. And one of the interventions that we would do in our clinic is manual palpation and then working on the soft tissue. And I've mentioned it a couple times so far today, but you can take a tennis ball and or a lacrosse ball. I like lacrosse balls better because they're basically hard rubber balls, and you can just get them at a sporting goods store like Dick's and things like that. And mm-hmm. you rub your muscle like on the wall or on a table on that near where that is painful. So you'd want to be on the muscle belly, okay. Not on the bone. And it keeps the tissue nice and mobile. And you may find that there's a couple really sore spots, and you just want to don't be super aggressive with it because that'll just irritate it. But keep working on it until it loosens up. And then, yeah, definitely strengthening is the big thing for tendons. But again, because you mentioned some numbness there, you may have nerve involvement, and that would be a slightly different approach. So if the numbness persists...
Well, so that's what I was curious about. Is there yeah. nerve damage there that I may need to get surgery for later?
Right. Nerve damage is where you would have weakness. So just if you have numbness that comes and goes, no. And it could just be because when you're exercising, you're getting fluid buildup. And then you could just use a compression so that you could just get a sleeve that goes over your elbow to keep compression on there to keep from basically prevent the swelling or reduce the swelling. And that can also potentially be what's causing it. But to go to surgery for something like this, no, you would definitely try other things first and have a physical therapist work on your arm before that. And then there's other techniques out there where you can do like a cortisone shot. And or there's PRP, which stands for platelet-rich plasma, that more and more doctors are doing before doing a surgery. So the surgery would literally be the last thing you want to do, because it doesn't mean you're going to get relief, number one, and it could create new problems for you. So you try to do everything you can ahead of time to avoid that.
Jacob, thanks so much for the call. Matthew Goodemote is our guest today. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's take one more before the next break. And Nancy in Clifton Park, you're on.
Hi. Yes, this is Nancy Schaefer.
Hi.
I have my daughter is 18 years old, and in 2019, she fell down and broke her L1. And she had a rod put in 4 pins, and... she went to physical therapy after about 6 weeks on her back and was getting over everything, was walking fairly well, and she was just learning how to bend with keeping her back straight and getting her legs working better and everything. Yep. And then COVID hit.
Yeah.
And she has had no physical therapy since then, and that was COVID hit, and she had just been practicing how to really do things again, and now she's had no PT, and I just don't know. Right now she's in college, but you know, her back still bothers her, and
yeah,
you know, it'll be 2 years in she did it in July, so that will be, you know, her 2 year mark, and I don't know if we should try if physical therapy will do any good for her, if it's been too long. I don't know.
No, definitely not. Yeah. It hasn't been too long for sure. So what happens is there could be some scar tissue forming from the surgery, which would be normal. And just the inconvenience and unfortunateness of the pandemic obviously stopped that progression. But it's not too late. Right. I've treated people who've been years out from surgery. You can restore motion and improve pain. And sometimes the pain that she's having is coming from muscle guarding because the body's still trying to figure out what the heck happened to it because there was a fracture, then surgery, then rods and things. So the joints above it right. aren't sure what's going on, the joints below it, and then the soft tissue all around it. So there's definitely things she could do, especially at that age. And after that kind yeah. of surgery,
well,
when I worked
with
a spine surgeon,
the place she was getting PT from closed.
Oh, yeah.
It was an hospital outshoot.
Right.
And they closed the whole office.
Yeah, during the right. COVID. Yeah.
So her records, pandemic, I don't know if she has records or anything.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we would start from scratch anyways, because when it's been that long since she's been in, it's essentially a new condition. So if it had been like 30, 60 days, then we go pick up from where we left off. But when it's been that long,
okay.
it would require a completely start from scratch, new evaluation, taking into account the history and all the things that had happened. And then but where she is today is really where we would go from.
Okay.
Hey, Nancy, we got to take a break, but thank you so much for the call. Physical therapist Matthew Goodemo joins us today, and our number is 800-348-2551. A quick peek at the mailbag and then back to the phones in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is our number. Physical therapist Matthew Goodemo joins us. And from Norm in Albany, last fall I had hernia surgery. Are there exercises that are not named sit-ups to get my abdomen back in shape without re-injuring the scarred area around the belly button? And that's from Norm.
Yes, in fact, there are. I'm not a big advocate of sit-ups anyway. One of the very first things to do after a surgery like that, believe it or not, is just deep breathing. We call it diaphragmatic breathing. Your diaphragm is attached to a whole bunch of abdominal muscles. So that's a very safe one to start with. And then from there, we would build out. And there's exercises called the dead bug or dying bug. And then there's other exercises like planks and side planks that you can, and bridges, all can be done eventually. But with a hernia, it is definitely something that would be smart to have somebody supervising instead of just trying to do some exercises on your own. Depending on how long the surgery was, if it was within the recent past, I would want somebody to take a look, because you can injure it and re-injure it. So learning how to do things properly would be smart.
All right, this is from Anonymous, and the subject heading is use it or lose it. Anonymous writes, I didn't use it enough and I've lost it. I have a doggy right knee that sometimes won't take the weight. It was due for an operation years ago. My gait, if you call it that, is barely a shuffle, and I'm over-dependent upon a roller or rollator, which takes 50% of the weight. Just recently, my left hip has become so weak I can't stand for long enough to perform basic household tasks. The exercises I find online are beyond what I can do. Even those designed for the elderly are too much for me. What to do? And that's from Anonymous.
So one of the exercises I would start with is the basic chair squat. I do it, and when I go around doing talks at senior centers and other places, this is my favorite strength exercise because it's safe to do and everybody can do it, or most everybody. The way you would do it is putting some blankets down in a chair, have the chair up against the wall so it doesn't slide out from under you, and then sit down. And the reason for the blankets is they boost you up higher. So you would pick a height that you can do and that you can do fairly easily, and then do repetitions, starting with 10 repetitions, working your way up to 20. And then once you can get, so you can do 15, 20 repetitions, you unfold the blanket so it comes down a little bit lower, and you start again, start to get to 10, 15. Once you get to 15 or 20, lower again, and keep doing that every day until you can get to the height of a normal chair. Once you can do that, put the blankets back in, and then shift your feet. So have a staggered stance where the weak leg is staying close to the chair and the strong leg is slightly out in front of you. And I usually use the heel and the toe as a guide. So I'd have the strong leg back, the weak leg forward, so that the strong leg is out in front and the weak leg is in the back, and then the toe and the heel match, and then sitting down and standing up that way. And what that does is it forces you to use the weak leg more. And then you would just keep on working on that until you could get that leg stronger. That's a safe one to do at home that everyone should be able to do. But there's also a lot more you could do. And this is where physical therapists thrive, because we have treatment tables that you can sit on and learn how to contract the muscle and do it without bearing weight to start, and then to eventually progress to weight. So there's definitely things that can be done, and you don't want to wait too long with that hip getting weaker, because it will impair your function more and more and make you more and more susceptible to other injuries and or falling.
All right.
Go
ahead. Finish it up.
No, that's good. That's good. Right?
All right. This is from Joyce, and then we'll hit the phones again. Subject heading, numbing in my thigh, which I think was an old song. Don't know why there's numbing in my thigh. She writes, after I walk about 20 to 50 yards, my left front thigh becomes numb. It does not stop me from activity, but it's disconcerting. And that's from Joyce.
So there's a couple things that come to mind. One, I'm just going to say, and it depends on what type of jeans you're wearing, believe it or not.
Oh, cut it out.
So nowadays, fashion is the skinny jeans, and there's a superficial nerve that comes out on the front of the thigh. And sometimes, because the tightness of the clothes, it doesn't have to be jeans, by the way, but just the tightness of the clothes, it can create that sensation in the front of the thigh. There's other things coming from the spine that would do the same thing. So if you have degeneration, so if it's an older person with degeneration or stenosis, that can cause the sensation in the thigh. But that typically is bilaterally, meaning both sides. So I would go first off, if it's the pants, it's an easy fix, obviously. And if not, then I would check into the spine and see what's going on there. And then, it's, like I say every time, it's mobility first, making sure you have good range of motion, and then going after some strength things. And sometimes a simple backwards bend while walking or a shift of the hip side to side can alleviate that numbness, and you can get on with the walk.
Amazing. So, I mean, if Joyce had called in, then you could follow up and say, Joyce, are your pants too tight? And it would have been a little embarrassing to ask the question, but I would have left that to you. Let's go to Robin in Shelburne Falls. Robin, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for the program.
Sure.
And my call, I woke up from a right hip surgery about 15 months ago with nerve damage and foot drop. And it hasn't really improved, so I've been exploring a lot of different possibilities going forward. I'm 66. I have chronic low back issues and have had for many years, including stenosis and pretty severe sciatica. And I just got through Mass General, a T3 MRI. They wanted to see if the causation might have been higher up, from the surgery. And it didn't show any lesions or neuromas or anything, but she did say that my piriformis muscles are atrophied on both sides. Mm-hmm. I had both hips done, but I had the foot drop with the right one. She said my piriformis are atrophied, and also threw in deep gluteal syndrome. So I'm wondering, is there therapy for that in the sciatic notch or not? And I'm just kind of wondering where I go from here, other than like a tendon transfer for my foot.
Oh, right. So there's definitely some things to do beforehand. And one would be to try to identify where that foot drop is coming from. So the foot drop, just to clarify for people listening, is the inability to lift the foot up. So when we try to bring our toes off the ground, that's called dorsiflexion. And when we lose that ability, we call it foot drop. And there's
and
a
I
few
cannot,
areas.
And just so you know, I cannot also move my foot out.
Okay.
I can't lift it up and I can't go to the right.
Oh, boy.
Right. So there's the possibility of different areas where you can have injuries. So when you're having a hip procedure, this is a potential complication that can occur. So it can occur due to injuring the nerve near where the hip surgery is. It can occur from the tourniquet down below, and it can obviously occur from the spine. Because of the inability to do those particular movements, it leads us towards specific nerve roots. And so that's why I wouldn't have suspected above, just because it's kind of one of those classic nerve root distributions. And so what you would want to do is to have, number one, an evaluation of the spine. And this would be a movement assessment first to see if there's any restriction in how the spine itself is moving. And because there was hip surgery and it was hip on both sides, that could be why the piriformis is the way it is and have nothing to do with your symptoms. It's just because you had hip surgery and is one of those incidental findings. But for me in the clinic, what I would do is I'd actually palpate and see, do you have any sensitivity there? And that can start to guide, because yes, the nerve does run through there, the sciatic notch, as you said. And then it would be to, first of all, try to identify, is it spine or is it hip? Is it from the surgery or not? And then you can do manual techniques to alleviate the tension of the muscles around there, which can sometimes give relief. And then part two is to specifically address the weakness. So to see if you can't lift at all, then we want to go to other muscles that are still innervated by the same nerve root to see, can you activate them? And the nerve will regenerate a millimeter a day. So some of the reason why it takes so long to restore is because of how little is improved day to day. And it still could be that you can get that strength back, but you have to target and do very specific exercises to try to regain it, to try to essentially reconnect the nerve root. And one example of that is, by the way, using your other foot. So we have this weird thing in our body when we use the side that's not hurt, that can sometimes have a crossover effect and improve the side that is. And then I would definitely want to see where your strength is, because the strength would dictate what, again, is a problem here. Is it just at the foot, or are you also weak at the hip area, like you said, the glutes and things? Because those aren't innervated by the same nerve root, so you can get return and you can have strength improve, and then we can start to like really zero in on what the problem is. So for me, it's like too much information here, and I need to kind of get more direct and figure out specifically what is your issue. Is it the spine? Is it the hip, first of all? And then second of all, what muscles are weak? And then how do we address those muscles? And then off you go. Right. This would be way before any type of intervention, surgical intervention, because right now it's not clear where the symptoms are coming from. So to go in and do a surgery, it'd be just like, well, let's guess here and see what happens. And then, I don't know if I would want to take that guess.
Hey, so. Robin, thank you very much for the call. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. Charles is in Albany. Charles, you're on.
Hi there. Hi. Hi, Matt.
Hi.
Are you getting any complaints from people who have had COVID with joint problems? I'm a massage therapist, and I did have a light case of COVID in December, and it hit my thoracic area and up into my neck, up into my, my neck muscles. As soon as I loosened them, it took a while, and my spine adjusted. Major adjustments, I started getting better. Have you had any stories like that?
No, not right now, but I would say that just due to the nature of what COVID can do to people with upper respiratory problems, I have had patients in the past with upper respiratory problems that have developed thoracic issues. So, in fact, one of my therapists that works for me, she had bronchitis and she coughed so much she fractured a rib.
Ouch.
So depending on the severity of your symptoms, that can lead to those things. But COVID in and of itself, I have not heard of stories like that yet. Who knows what will happen in the future, but so far, no.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Now, one of the residual things I have is sort of like a slight pain, maybe a 2 out of 10 in my where my either anterior or lateral deltoids hook into my humerus, and it seems like it's deep, not in the muscle, but deep. It's bothersome, but not crazy, and it just seemed like it's a residual from the COVID. Are you hearing any kind of complaints like that?
No, not so far. What it sounds like, though, some of the symptoms, again, it can be related to the way you used your body when you were going through the COVID. So to link it directly to the virus, not so much. But, for example, we had a patient that had a rotator cuff injury, and he ended up getting hospitalized with COVID before he could come into therapy. And when he came in, he had definitely had a regression in the rotator cuff, but it was because he wasn't able to use his arm. It wasn't because the COVID caused problems. He had a pre-existing injury, and then being hospitalized, everything was regressed. So because of the symptoms you've described, it's entirely possible that the residual is due to that, and that would be how you held your body during the virus, during your symptoms, whether you coughed, whether you were laying down more, whether you slept more, things like that.
All right, Charles, thanks a lot. We go quickly now to Hinsdale, Massachusetts. Rima, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a pain in my left humerus. I think it's at the insertion of the anterior deltoid, and I associate it with repetitive motion from shoveling all winter and, you know, using the same arm in the same direction. And now I'm finding I'm using I'm doing a lot of raking. And at night, it bothers me at night. I'll just be laying there, and I have to straighten my arm if there's any flexion. There's a pain and a soreness right at that point. It's just below the shoulder, anteriorly on the left side. And I was wondering what I can do to strengthen that. I am a yoga teacher, so, I mean, I don't have loss of range of motion, or I'm not restricted in my practice, but it does the pain does come up, especially now that I'm active outside. The snow is gone, so I'm just wondering what I can do to kind of counter that.
Well, the first thing is I'm going to volunteer Ray to come and rake your leaves for you.
Oh, so yeah, thank you. Yes. You know why? Because I've given up doing my own. I just let it settle into the grass.
So that is
we have a lot of gardens. So I have it's going to take me a couple of days to do what I need to do. So.
I hear you.
So the muscle that you're talking off could be the bicep tendon as opposed to the deltoid.
Yeah.
So the long head of the bicep comes right through.
Yeah.
But that pulling motion, that lifting motion with shoveling, that's usually that tendon that's getting irritable because it helps to initiate that flexion motion. Then when you do it repetitively, so sometimes that tendon, well, not sometimes, that tendon goes into the joint itself. So it could be influencing the labrum inside the socket itself, but the irritation is on the bicep. And this would be just a palpation thing. So you want to, number one, if you have full range of motion, that's good. You want to make sure it's not too loose, though, because sometimes there could be a mild subluxation where your shoulder's a little bit forward. And so I would just do a joint mobilization to check that. And then strengthening-wise, it's the back of the muscle of the shoulders that you would really focus on, because the front is irritated right now. And oftentimes it's because there is an imbalance that you're overusing the front muscles and not enough of the back. So that would be things like rows and pull downs and things like that, and your rhomboids and that kind of thing. But if you know a manual therapist, whether it's massage or PT, it doesn't hurt to have somebody just poke around there and see if you can find some relief with the soft tissue. But based on what you're describing, it's very common. So I'm guessing it's really the bicep as opposed to that deltoid, just because that's usually what it is. So.
All right.
Yeah, I do try to massage it, and it's very sensitive. It does feel good. But okay, well, thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Hey, Rima, thanks a lot for the call. Now, we only have about 15 seconds left here, Matthew Goodemult. This email came in from Anonymous, and it's a rather long one. But the first sentence, maybe you can answer it. Can we live without an ACL?
Yes. My brother doesn't have one.
Really? And everything is okay?
He plays sports, but... Well, no, he's a train wreck, but yes, you can.
Well, I hope he's listening.
So the ACL's job is to prevent movement of the femur over the tibia.
Yeah.
And you can do a whole bunch of strengthening for the hamstring, which can help out.
Yeah.
Doing sports that require cutting and pivoting, not so much. The ACL is really important, but everyday, day-to-day things, absolutely, you can live without the ACL.
All right.
I would have people strengthen the heck out of their leg to compensate for not having an ACL, but it is possible to function.
Hey, Matthew Goodemult, we're done, my friend. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Sounds good, Ray. Take care.
Have a good one. Support comes from Adele Shafridi Studio and Gallery, a jewelry store in Rhinebeck featuring in-house designed and handcrafted fine jewelry with an emphasis on bridal and studio-made jewelry, Shafridi.com. and Patricia Fennell and Albany Health Management Associates using restorative phase practices in trauma's aftermath for schools, workplace, and community, albanyhealthmanagement.com. Once again, thanks to physical therapist Matthew Goodemote for being with us today. Apologies if your call didn't get through. Matt will be back again soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones screened today by Ali Peterson. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the program, oh yeah, we welcome back an all-star. And we'll talk about the stars with Bob Berman. It's Astronomy Tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for 51%.